Hey, podcast, welcome to another edition of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Demester Dahl. Buckle up, we got a lot going on this episode. There's a lot of news happening. We had the first major auto show of the season. New reveals, new products, people being sued, rust recalls, just a lot of stuff going on this week. So let's start with being sued. That's usually America's favorite topic. We have 2007-2012 Ram owners, so Ram pickup owners, for model year 2007 to 2012 model years, 3/4 ton and 1 ton have filed a class action lawsuit against FCA and Cummins. There are over 500,000 owners of these trucks. 500,000, that's quite a big number for a class action. Making a class action, excuse me. That's a lot of people. They contend that FCA and Cummins conspired together to hide nitrogen oxide emissions up to 14% higher than legally allowed in the trucks. So Volkswagen cheat device. They feel like that those trucks had items in them and mechanical items in them that hid those emissions from emissions testings, but still allowed it to go out. Now, why would FCA and Cummins do that? What advantage would that give them? Horsepower and torque. It'd be better off the line. If you remember those model years, it was 2007 and 8 when the new fluid, the DEF fluid, excuse me, I had to think about this. I've been traveling a lot this weekend. This podcast might kind of be a little bit back and forth sometimes. When the diesel exhaust fluid was added to Cummins diesel engines and all diesel engines to take away the particulate filter and reduce the emissions coming out of those trucks to make them cleaner running diesel engines, it also really hampered the horsepower and torque of a lot of those trucks. And you'll find a lot of guys who are trying to find pre-2007 diesel trucks because they had better fuel economy, had more power, although they polluted quite a bit. And so when that happened, companies tried to do different things, and they contend Ram was able to keep some horsepower and torque by hiding some of the emissions. It's a class action suit, which means it'll probably be two, three years till we hear anything or anything goes forward. It's going to be an ongoing topic. Speaking of ongoing topics, another topic that had been going on for years finally got settled in Los Angeles District Court. Toyota is going to pay out $3.4 billion to address rust concerns in 2005 through 2010, Toyota Tacoma trucks, 2007 through 2008, Toyota Tundras, and 2005-2008, Toyota Sequoias. The rust issue for Toyota products has been well known and documented over the years. They not always notoriously known for them, but depending on the model year, you could have a rusty frame. Toyota has done things over the last several years. They've done recalls, they've replaced frames and older models. This is they're doing it again with these newer vehicles, the 2005-2010. They're trying to take and fix all the wrongs of this rust on these vehicles. So as the suit claims, Toyota claims no fault. They will take the vehicles in. They'll inspect them at the dealership level. They'll see what needs to happen. If it's a full $15,000 new frame, they'll do that. If it's simple rust fixing here and there in the frame, they'll do that as well. And so the owners of these vehicles are going to get well taken care of, and they should get well taken care of for some rust issues. Interestingly enough, I've talked to Toyota's chief engineer at Tacoma and Tundra, Mike Swears, on this several times, and he contends that there was changes in what the EPA would allow them to do as far as rust proofing on frames and rust proofing on trucks. And they changed the chemical composition up, and he blames it on that. But I think somebody still dropped the ball there. However, to his credit, if you remember 2 weeks ago on the podcast, we had the Steel Development Marketing Institute on, Mr. Dave Anstron. He actually talked about how the steel companies are struggling with chassis and keeping the rust off chassis. And so there's some ongoing issues here with rust on vehicles. Used to be just Z-barted it and you were done, but apparently there's been some changes. I haven't delved too deep into what the chemical changes would be from the EPA level to change the rusting up, but that it's being blamed for that. And Toyota's going to set up a plate with a $3.4 billion a fix from the lawsuit. It does come at an interesting time where Toyota and most manufacturers are starting to see a slowdown in sales. Things were kind of capping off. You had the VW with their massive, I think they had another couple billion dollar lawsuit. I can't remember the exact number at the moment. but they were addressing concerns with their Dieselgate issue where they were cheating the EPA and cheating consumers. And so we're having a lot of these at a bad time for automakers. They're trying to stem the tide of making sure that they keep profitable, even though we have a slower, overall slowing truck market. It's kind of leveling off. It's not rising as fast. And we have a bunch of new SUVs, which is that's the growing segment. So we have some changes going on. So it's an interesting time for that lawsuit to happen. It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of it. It sounds like it's a good deal. It's still got to be approved in the court level. And so when it gets approved, owners will start getting notices probably in 3-4 months. Speaking of new and speaking of how things are changing, I was just in the 2016 Los Angeles Auto Show. They call it Automobility LA. They have a new name for that show. I call it the LA Auto Show. And I was there because I was going to check out the brand new Chevy Colorado ZR2. It's their new off-road midsize truck. And we're going to get to that after this short break. And we're back with more on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Tim Estradal. Chevy Colorado ZR2. It's back. It's back. The ZR2 is back in the lineup. A very exciting truck. This was from the 2014 LA Auto Show. They did a concept vehicle on there that had so much response from journalists, from fans, from forums that Chevy stepped up and they're going to build the truck. And to its credit, Chevy spent 2 years in this truck, which is a pretty quick turnaround process, and it looks a lot like the concept. Just doesn't have the orange wheels, but you could probably get some orange paint, take care of that. But anyways, it's very much matches what the concept was trying to do. It's trying to liven the brand up. If you look at a Chevy Colorado and a Chevy GMC Canyon, they had the Trail Boss, which is kind of their off-road package as far as they got, and still wasn't that cool. It just didn't really get that big attraction to the millennials. You know, it was the older buyer's pickup, and that's fine. I mean, it was a very comfortable ride and had some smaller size to make it easier to park. It had a good price point. It had a lot of those features that customers wanted. But when you wanted an off-road machine, you had to go to Toyota. Toyota had the Tacoma, and that's well-known among 20-year-old, 30-year-old men who want mid-sized trucks. Chevy's coming ZR2 is going to challenge that. It's going to challenge the Tacoma. It's going to challenge Nissan Frontier Pro 4X. It's going to challenge those vehicles. Chevy calls it a segment of one. Not really sure about that too much, but I think it's very comparable to the Toyota Tacoma TRD Pro. I think there's a lot of comparisons to be done. You're going to see probably more comparisons to that than any other midsize truck in the market, and you'll see it from all different publications. But what's makes this special? So let's step up for a minute. They took the Chevy Colorado, and they started and they created a whole new exterior. They got rid of the dumb air dam. They took that off. They wrapped the new bumpers front and rear. No. Fun fact, no rear bumper step because they literally crushed in the rocks and figured out it didn't work. So they wrapped that up so they don't have the same entry-exit angle of like mid-sized cars. They actually do have some pretty great exit entry angles and departure angles. I didn't get any of the breakaway angles. They weren't publishing that. But I did get that it's a 2-inch increase in suspension overall when they put new Multimatic shock absorbers. If you haven't heard of Multimatic, and I hadn't heard of them either, usually it's Fox, it's usually Bilsteins. This is a new company. They are known for Formula One racing shocks. Their latest shocks are done in a Chevy Camaro Z28. They're a dynamic suspension spool valve technology. That's what they're using. DSSV, if you want to shorten it down. What it does, allows them to have additional rebound and compression settings. It's four-way adjustable. It's got reserve remote reservoirs on the shocks, and it's got really nice dampeners. And it's interesting. So in Chevy's press conference, we're in LA. We're at the warehouse district somewhere. It's kind of an interesting spot. They had to build an off-road course. And the presentation, Chevy talked a lot about the ZR2, but they also talked a lot about the Chevy Camaro. They talked a lot about the Chevy Corvette, the ZL1. They talked a lot about the sports cars. And it was interesting because usually in a truck event, you don't talk about sports cars that much, but they spend a lot of time on sports cars. They spend a lot of time talking about how they're going to use some of the same technology because, you know, yeah, going off-road is different than being on a track. However, you still need some similar suspension. You still need some similar high-quality suspension upgrades in both ways. And so, you know, this has obviously been set up for the off-road. It's definitely been tuned for off-roading. But it's interesting how much they carried over to two products. They did put a hood on there, a hood scoop on there, excuse me. They put a hood, obviously. They did put a hood scoop on there. It's non-functional. I talked to the engineer about that, and the reality is the engine choices with the, it's got a small baby Duramax diesel. Yes, it will have a diesel, and they do have the V6 gasoline engine in it. There's just no benefit, really, to have the hood scoop. They did try to put hood scoops in, and they actually got more increased airflow, and it did not turn into better a performance. It just wasn't worth it to them. So they have that. They put some nice tow hooks in the front. They kind of put some cool appearance stuff. It's got a really great look. It's got 31-inch Wrangler tires on the side. It's got these rock sliders, and they're steps, but they're really strong rock rails. And they literally said, we destroyed the other ones. We constantly went back and constantly worked on them, constantly improved them. And these are hardy enough to handle the Rubicon Trail. Yes, this went down the Rubicon Trail as part of their testing. Like I said, there's no bumper steps. They took that off. It's got a... what else? Oh, it's one of the interesting things it has is it's a two-speed transfer case, which is pretty normal. But it's got 9 different drive modes in both of the different two-speeds. And one of those drive modes is full off-road. And this drive mode allows you to turn off all the nannies. No traction control, no ABS. Turn it all off, and you can do some rock crawling. You can do some stuff at low speeds. Or you can do like we did in Tacoma, and you can drive fast at 4 low without the nannies and just have a great time. And it looks really good. They did put a spare tire in the back of the bed, which looks pretty cool. It has a really cool look. It's just a cool truck. It's just a really cool truck. It really stands out. It really would give you some good ideas on what you can do with a stock Colorado if you look at the ZR2, or you can spend the money to get the ZR2. Speaking of the money, Chevy told me that they're very price conscious with this truck. They know it's going to be an expensive truck. They get that. They're going to try to keep it at a reasonable price point. I think it's going to be tough because they're going to offer it with a Duramax diesel. Diesel's going to add $3,000. You know, we're talking at the event with a journalist, and they pointed out the Trail Boss ran upwards of $47,000. So $47,000 plus additional $3,000 for Duramax diesel puts you $50,000, and it puts you Raptor range. It just does, and that's going to be a concern for them because it's just not a Raptor competitor. I just don't see it. It can handle the trails like the Raptor can. I mean, they set the course, and of course, the Chevy Colorado ZR2 did great on their course. They set it up for it. However, they did point out several things. I mean, we hit the whoops pretty hard and pretty fast. We did set the front locker and rear locker. It's got both, and we had set those going up a 17-foot climb, and so you know those work pretty well. But one of the interesting things is you come down the climb. They had this obstacle course set up with these inflatable cones. And they have it set up that literally the ZR2 can fit, a Raptor can't. And that is the one big thing you're dealing with here is if you're living in Southern California and you got the desert east of you and you can just go out to the desert and just have a good time and Baja, the Raptor is perfect. The Raptor is absolutely what you want. It's got the horsepower, it's got the speed, it's got the powertrain. You can get out there and just rip it loose. However, if you're going to go, like, say, up north in Michigan, and you want to go to the trails up north, and you want to drive around and have a fun day there, Raptors don't fit. I mean, they do. I've seen people do it, but the trails are narrower. And so this is a really good best of both worlds. It's a smaller vehicle, so you park it in your garage, you can drive it all week back to work and park it anywhere you want to park it and not have any problems, and it's easier to handle than a full-size truck. But when you want to get on the trails, it fits on the trails. You can literally go back in the woods and go up a few hills and down some rock beds and things and go fishing or go hunting or just play around. And you don't have to worry about the size being a concern. Inside the cab, it's still somewhat roomy. I mean, it's a mid-sized truck. It's not going to have the huge mega cab back side of, like, say, like a Ram or like the Crew Max, ton of Crew Max. It doesn't have that kind of room, but it's a smaller size truck. I have concerns about price on this. I think it's badass. I think it's really a badass truck. I think it's exactly what the brand needed to do to attract attention. I think millennials are going to be all over it because it's really exciting and it's really going to energize that brand. But I do worry that it's going to be $50,000. Now, you could say the MSRP on the Raptor is 53 or 54, whatever it is. Good luck finding one at that price. I think they're going to be jacked up at different price points and it's going to be a $60,000, $70,000 truck. So you do have some price difference there, but it's going to be hard on paper to explain that to people and be able to see it. I think we're going to have to see it in the marketplace. We're going to see what people do and see what they end up paying at the dealership level. It's going to be iconic. You're going to see this little mid-sized truck all over the place. You're going to see it on posters and magazines. Whatever you do, you're going to see this ZR2. It's fantastic, and I can't wait to drive it more or drive it at all. We had a ride along. I didn't get to drive it at all, but I can't wait to get in and drive it and see how it does. I've driven, like I said, I've driven a Tacoma off road. I've driven a TRD Pro off road. I've done those comparisons. I've driven a Nissan Frontier off road. I can't wait to try the ZR2 off road. I know they spent a lot of time and energy on it, and I'm excited. I'm excited for them. I think it's going to be fantastic. I think they're going to have a good success. I think it's going to sell. I don't know what the numbers will be that'll sell, maybe just 5-10% of the marketplace. I know they're going to expand their production in Wentzville to put it down the line, which hurts some of the van stuff because they're constantly juggling production in Wentzville. But it's what they needed to do. It's absolutely what the brand needed to do, and it's exciting. It's going to get them lots of marketing play. It's going to get lots of attention, and it's not just going to be about Toyota Tacoma being the off-road truck. Chevy's got an answer. And we'll be right back with more on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, including two of our guests this week. Since Chevy flew me out to LA, so they paid my airfare and hotel, I decided to spend some time with them. So we talked to a person from Chevy and a person from GMC, and they'll be right up next on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk.
Plus SUV Talk. I'm your host, Dennis Riddell. Today we're in a work truck. It's exciting. It's a Chevy Silverado work truck. You don't see a lot of these covered in magazines or places, but it's an exciting market. Fleet business is up. I would say it's an exciting segment. I think there's a lot of new fleet customers coming out there. We're just talking with Chevrolet's Hugh Melny, marketing and advertising manager for Silverado. And we were just talking about the Kodiak, the truck you had at the SEMA show with the plow. So we're talking about some cool, like, fleet vehicles. Fleet in commercial. And the commercial side of the business is actually where Chevrolet plays. It's one thing to talk about fleet and that side of it, but there's so many small businesses out there. At SEMA, we revealed our Alaskan snowplow truck that basically just puts a little fun in snow plowing.
Sure.
For those small business customers.
Snow plowing is a lot of fun anyways, but
it's no doubt about it. There's nothing better than plowing out a pile of snow and be like, whoa, I did that. But now you can do it with a little bit of style.
The style aspect of plowing snow.
Absolutely.
This is fantastic.
Talking fleet-wise, there's this other big player in the marketplace that talks a lot about, beats their drums about fleet. But you guys have a good, sizable fleet business as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we have a bunch of customers we've had over the years. Fleet business is always important. I mean, that is a big purchaser of trucks. And for the 17 model year, we've got our new Duramax diesel, 445 horse, 910 foot-pounds of torque.
All Which is done, just ridiculous.
All done with 30% less emissions than the previous Duramax motor. So what we're sitting in is a one-ton regular cab dually work truck trim, which may be a little unique for a retail auto show, but from a commercial or fleet perspective, we do sell a bunch of them.
And looking around this truck, we have power windows, and we have power locks. Are these options that we've added to this truck, or does it come standard with that?
A lot of what you're seeing here is standard content. I mean, we got cloth seats, you get your choice of that. We do still have your traditional work truck rubber floor manual shifter that a lot of our customers want. Locks and windows that come with a convenience package, but work trucks aren't like what they used to. I mean, this truck here, if you actually look at it, you go back a decade, this was a retail-based truck.
Oh, yeah, this was the old 1500.
Absolutely.
This is what they had. So from a marketing standpoint, what are the consumers telling you in the fleet business and overall? Are we adding more and more features to the truck than what customers want? Are they asking for this stuff?
A lot of the customers are asking for it just from the standpoint of how you treat employees, the various unions that are out there in terms of adjustable seats, certain levels of content that they're looking for. I mean, wasn't that long ago the air conditioning wasn't standard content on an org truck. So at some point, there's a certain baseline level of equipment, just like you see it in the retail market. You know, what a retail customer is looking for, you can apply the same kind of knowledge to a fleet customer that they're looking for a certain base level of content that, you know, they want their employees happy too.
And speaking of consumers, the one thing that always interests me about Chevy and GMC is, and you guys are changing up the marketing speak. So 10 years ago, for example, on the fleet side, we're talking everything was cheap, and the retail side, we're talking about torque horsepower. Who had the more torque, who had the most horsepower. These days, you guys are like, hey, we got 4G LTE. We got quiet cabins. You guys are marketing things to truck customers that aren't atypical marketing talk.
That's true, and I would say that it applies to the retail and the fleet side of the business, right? I mean, it's kind of reached almost the point of ridiculousness for how much a light-duty truck and a heavy-duty truck can tow, right?
Yeah, right.
At some point, equipment, the weight of the equipment and stuff that people tow hasn't really changed that much over the years, right? But how you do it, so one of the things we focus on, especially with our HD and even with our new Duramax diesel engine, even with the increases in horsepower and torque, our payload and towing are relatively carryover because we already tow more than our customers need. The reality is it's about the towing experience. So your acceleration 0 to 60 with a load is significantly better. Your overall drive experience is better, and we focus on more of driver confidence, you know, versus really worrying about claims. So whether it's, you know, the digital steering assist that helps you steering the vehicle and takes the workload out of, like, you know, driving a truck down the highway, towing across country, whether you're, you know, going down a hill, the diesel exhaust brake, the hill grade braking, all of the things that make you feel safer and confident. If you say your crew's going downhill with a heavy load, it will hold you at that speed. These are the areas that we focus in with, we think are actually important, not only to a retail customer, but our fleet customer, right? I mean, you want your driver safe, and you want them to feel confident with what they're, you know, the equipment that they're operating.
And getting back a little bit to the fleet customer, how big are the factors of, like, fuel economy to a fleet customer?
Well, it's huge. This is their business, right? So even when you talk about heavy-duty trucks where we don't really rate fuel economy,
right.
Anecdotally, we hear all the time that our Duramax diesel does better than a lot of our competition. We hear that day in and day out. So any of those operating costs and expense that go into a business, it's huge for a fleet.
Yeah. And I would think that's definitely the case, like you said, in the fleet side and consumer side. Are we getting to the point where we've done so much with trucks, we're going to have limited returns? Like, you know, I don't think customers really understand. To get 1 mile per gallon better in a truck on a highway, it takes a lot of engineering. It takes a lot of work. You're talking air dams, you're talking airflow, you're talking design aspects all the way through it. Are we going to hit a limit pretty soon about how fuel economy we get to? We're going to get to that point because we still got a box on wheels. And are consumers still demanding that fuel economy? Or is it still one of the top buying reasons?
It's kind of funny. When prices are holding where they're at today, you see a lot more people buying trucks that maybe wouldn't have bought them otherwise. So the truck market itself, just as a segment for retail customers, has really exploded because people like trucks. They're cool again. They're fun again. A lot of our customers that are buying our special editions, our conquest customers, are coming out of vehicles, quite honestly, because they're cool. But you still always have this kind of core truck customer that needs trucks. And I think what you're going to see over time, quite honestly, the forecast for fuel prices will remain relatively stable for the foreseeable future. So I don't think that's going to be a major impact. But we are constantly, as a company at General Motors, finding ways to improve fuel economy. And there's a lot of technology that goes into it, but there's, you know, alternative fuels, alternative powertrains. We have a lot of stuff in the horizon coming that is going to continue to increase that. So customers, no matter what, it's still money, right? They still want to save money. So you're going to always see that stuff. To what degree and how important it is for, like, a reason to purchase, it may not be in their top 10, but it's still always going to be important.
And talking about Silverado as well and heavy duty, did you guys get back into a medium duty segment? You just re-entered a new segment. It was a cab?
So we have announced that we are getting back into some bigger trucks coming in the near future.
Right.
We do have in production right now and have just started the sale of a low cab Forward.
That's what I was thinking it was. Yeah.
Yep.
So do you see that as a growth market? I mean, was that not a growth market in the past that we got out of it? Or?
We got out of it for a variety of reasons. If you look at the economy, what was going on in the marketplace, the industry, it just didn't quite make sense. Okay. As you look at where we're at today, what we've done with the company in terms of streamlining the company, where we're at with trucks and what the market is, it's a place that we think there's a huge opportunity. Low cab Ford, while it's a smaller volume for what it is, because it's a little bit of a niche truck, a lot of them are either get boxes put on them for delivery, or a lot of them get used for like landscape type stuff. In metro areas, because the cab sits pretty much directly over the front axle, it makes for great maneuverability. Right. So there is definitely a market for them. We've got back into that pretty quickly, and we've got some other announcements coming in the near future on some other unique products.
And speaking of like some unique products, I was just reading about, and there was an update somewhere about the e-assist system in the Silverado in California, and talking about that's only sold in California.
Correct.
But what is that? I mean, how does that?
So e-assist, if you look at e-assist on a truck, it's really not significantly different to what we offered on cars, Malibus, and some of our other products, right? So you talk about fuel prices. Right now, fuel prices aren't a big deal to customers, but we're always doing stuff, right? So we have that technology. We wanted to put it in a truck to test it out. California is a great market for it. So it operates a lot like our e-assist cars. It will shut off at lights. There are some other aerodynamic pieces put into it, aero shutters and otherwise, to improve fuel economy. I'll be honest with you, I drove one, and I'd get 23, 24 on the highway day in and day out, and much better fuel economy around the city.
Right.
So it's one of those ones where right now it's a little bit of a pilot phase with trucks and doing some stuff in California, but we are in a position that we could roll it out broader if we decide to.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have played with hybrids back and forth. You've had hybrids, Yukons, and Tahoe. You still see them occasionally, but the cost has always been a concern with that, because you have to increase the cost and what your return fuel economy-wise, you know, it's a customer-based decision. Are they going to put the extra money into it and get the fuel economy back out of it?
And one of the things that you see in the marketplace today, those vehicles are very important. I mean, our Bolt EV just won Motor Trend Car of the Year, right?
Right.
So it is definitely important. It's a little bit different value proposition on trucks because it's hard to get the towing out of them, the capability out of them. But I think over time, technologies improve. You're going to see more and more of that in trucks. It just makes sense.
It absolutely does. And we're here at the 2016 LA Auto Show. We'll be right back with more. With Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. We're with Stu Pierce. He's a senior marketing manager, trucks and full size for GMC. Earlier we talked about Chevy. Now we're with the cousin, brother, other family member that's known as GMC these days. They're a separate separate marketing, separate styling, separate, really a separate truck company these days, aren't you?
Yeah, we're trying to be as separate and unique as we can. So really going after a different customer, somebody looking for to make a little bolder statement, a little bit more high-end and premium, refined kind of vehicles. So we think there's a good niche out there for us, and that's where we're headed.
And speaking of different, bold, refined, kind of different styling, we're in the GMC X-Train. It's X-Truck?
All-Terrain.
All-Terrain X. Sorry, let me get the buzzword bingo here. All-Terrain X, for those folks that aren't playing bingo. It's the heavy-duty version. So we had light-duty. Now we're doing heavy-duty. So tell us about this new truck.
Yeah, well, this is we're actually not even in production yet. We're going to be starting in production right after the first of the year. So what we've done, we've taken our all-terrain, HD all-terrain, and just added onto it with even a little bit bolder presence. So what we did is we took, there were a few elements of chrome on the other truck. We've taken that all off, made it more of a real blackout kind of a look. We put on the sport bar in the back, as we've got our light-duty all-terrain X. And I think probably the most important attribute on the vehicle is the MT tires. So it's got the big, really aggressive off-road tires that really make a statement and actually do, you know, provide added capability off-road.
Yeah, and speaking of off-road capability and things, there's a lot made these days of stock from the factory, heavy-duty or even light-duty off-road machines from the manufacturer. You know, maybe you're tired of going to SEMA, seeing all your work going away. You can do it from the factory and keep some profits in-house. But I was under the impression that GMC was the professional grade that really was just trying to be more of that luxury kind of truck buyer. But this is not I mean, this is a wild, different ride. This is a different appearance. This is a different animal you have going on here.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question, because we actually do get that sometimes that, aren't we the luxury truck brand? You know, we actually, you know, we are really one of the original truck brands. If you think about where GMC started, we have a foundation that's based on big, you know, heavy-duty off-road, or not off-road, but just very capable semi-trucks, giant tractor trailers over the road. That's what GMC stood for 20, 30, 40 years ago. That's where we started. And then it wasn't until 1999, which has now been some number of years, but that's when we introduced the first Denali.
Yeah.
So, and the great thing, the thing that's made Denali so great is that it takes that very capable foundation of a truck, that GMC truck, and builds and adds on to that a lot of refinement and up-level features and amenities and technologies. So it's that combination of, you know, strong truck capability with this high-level refinement that really makes Denali and GMC what it's all about. And that's what our point of difference is in the market. So this all-terrain X really then, I just think, takes that capability back, to a little bit of where GMC's heritage is. We're known to be a truck company. That's what we are. And so this is our chance to make a stronger statement in that space.
Yeah, I mean, GMC is well-known as a truck company. Actually, it was just farming. And you may see the pictures on our Facebook page on Pickup Truck Talk. Farming with some GMC trucks. They're grain trucks, two-ton trucks from back in the day. And it was fascinating to see these workhorses that still go.
Yeah.
You know, they still have the capability. The 350 V8s, turning radius isn't so great, but we're talking a 60-some GMC big heavy-duty truck. So these days, you know, and that's kind of got me interested, because as grain trucks, we had Chevys and GMCs, which are very similar. But these days, when you hop in a GMC versus a Chevy, it's a very different experience. From the styling, from the ride comfort, everything's a little bit different. It's definitely more refined. And so you take this all-terrain X, and you have the off-road capability with luxury.
That's really the strategy here, right? So this truck only comes in a, you know, very highly contented. It's got the, you know, the nicely leather-appointed heated seats. It's got the heated steering wheel. It's got the Bose audio system. So it's the only way we bring it to market. So it's got this tremendous capability, but yet it's got all the latest technologies as well.
Are you concerned at all about price points on these kind of vehicles? Have we met a price point ceiling from the consumer yet?
Well, you know, there certainly are customers at all different price points, but there's been a lot of growth. In fact, the fastest part of the truck segment, both light duty and heavy duty, has been really more at the high end. That's where the market is going. So what you're seeing is that pickup trucks have become, because of the fact that they're now so nice, they're so comfortable, they're so quiet, and they have all the technology, you're getting a lot of people that have come out of luxury cars and other sports cars saying, I can drive a truck with all that capability and still have all those other things. So, you know, we're seeing this growth in the high end of the market. That's a great place for GMC. So that's really our focus. Yeah, we still have trucks that, you know, more the mid-level range of the market, and we still sell work trucks. But our real focus is on these high-end trucks, whether it's this all-terrain X version or the Denali, which is certainly the bigger some of the others.
Are you seeing leasing change a little bit? I know there's maybe a year ago I read some stories about how in the luxury truck segment, or the Luxo truck, you know, the $50,000, $60,000 range truck, that more customers are leasing it because that customer was used to buying BMWs or Mercedes-Benz. They're used to leasing those vehicles because if you get that at price point, you lease them, you can turn around, so it has resale value. Are we seeing more leasing in that, in your range of products?
We're seeing a little bit more. It's growing. It's still below most other segments, but we have seen our lease rates come up, and I think most of the competitors as well. So there's definitely a little bit more interest there. I think it's probably, like as you say, it's people coming out of some of these other vehicles where segments, more expensive vehicles where leasing is more common.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen pictures of like a BMW 3 Series in a garage with a full-size truck next to it. I mean, that's because that refinement of trucks has changed so much that people are opting for those versus, you know, cutting to the car.
Because
you get the versatility. And especially in this product, you have the versatility. So what kind of off-road capability does this all-terrain X have?
Well, you know, all of our Sierras, HDs have great, if you get the four-wheel drivers, these are just tremendously capable. So, you know, what this one does is it adds the Z71 suspension package. So it's got a, you know, shock tuning that's a little bid more specifically geared for it off-road. It's got the skid plates at the bottom. And then, you know, with these new tires, that takes a step further just in terms of traction. So, it's a really capable vehicle. So I'm looking forward to spending some time off-road myself once we get them out of production.
Yeah, it's surprising that it's this luxurious that you still want to get it dirty. you still want to go climb some rocks with it. You still want to do some of that off-road capability. But inside, I mean, I don't know that it's the same material as Denali level, but it's definitely got that same premium material.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we want to do a lot of market research. We talk to customers, and what we hear from a lot of customers is they want a vehicle, they want a truck that they can take out during the day. They want to be able to throw their dirt bikes or throw their, you know, their sports gear, camping equipment, whatever it is in the back of the truck. They want to be able to go out wherever they want to go, off-road. The truck gets muddy, gets dirty, doesn't matter. They want to be able to then take that truck at night. They want to come back, run it to the car wash, take their wife out to an expensive dinner at a nice restaurant, and give the keys to the valet. So that's what these trucks can do now. You know, is these are nice enough to give those keys to the valet and be proud of it. It's going to be parked in the front row because it's such a fantastic looking vehicle. But during the day, you know, it just doesn't matter. These things can take that mud just as well as anything else.
No, absolutely. Talking about differences and changes in trucks and differences in how trucks are changing. 4G LTE, that's a buying part of decision making nowadays. The 4G LTE, they have the Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Can you even think 10 years ago we were talking about Wi-Fi and trucks as a buying part of the buying process?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's technology is all moving so fast that it's hard to keep up with it. The cool thing about 4G is that enables so many other things in the vehicle. So, but, you know, every time, every technology that we rolled out on our trucks, we anticipate that we're not going to see that high of penetration rates and that customers just are all over it. They just want it. So, whether it's forward collision alert that we've got now, lane keep assist, they're all features that customers, as soon as they can get it, they want it.
Yeah, so you're like going down to the Cadillac offices, see what they're doing to put in the trucks, right?
You know, it's always a fine line because, you know, to be on the absolute leading edge of technology, you're going to be paying a lot of money. So we got to balance what's right for our brand, you know, but we are out looking all the time at our friends over in New York now to see what they've got and see if there's anything we can help us.
And lastly, speaking about sales, you guys, sales-wise, have been growing. You know, GMC doesn't grow the same percentage growth that, like, Chevy has. When Chevy has a big month, they have a big month. But, you know, they go big month or small decrease. You guys have steadily grown your brand and steadily grown your market share.
Yep.
Do you think that's because of the premium features you're taking this truck to, or is it the 4G LTE? Or what's really driving that that sales?
Yeah, you know, I think it comes back to what you talked about at the beginning. I think it's the differentiation. You know, we're putting more emphasis today on trying to differentiate our brand. I think if you go back, you know, 10, 15 years ago, you know, the difference between a Chevrolet and a GMC wasn't as significant. Today, we've got unique sheet metal. We've got, you know, unique interior blocks. We've got unique technologies in some places. So, you know, magnetic ride on our light duty Denalis, you know, is unique there. So, I think when we start doing those kinds of things and really going with a different strategy, then I think, you know, that's where that enables us to grow as well as just Chevy grow at the same time.
Yeah, and if you haven't been to dealership yet, you haven't seen a GMC or Chevy, or been to the auto show, and you haven't seen them, they're separate auto shows, they're separate areas, they're separate styling, they're separate designs, they look a lot different. I'd encourage you to go check it out, especially the All-Terrain X. It's a different animal. I've driven the Denali's versions of the Sierras, and it's very nice. But you get in the All-Terrain X, it's like, wait, what? What's going on? So they're exciting products. They're definitely need to check out. Thanks for being on the program today.
Hey, Tim, thank you. Great to be here.
Yep, and we'll be right back with more Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk.
And finally on this week's podcast is a discussion on the 2017 Honda Ridgeline Black Edition. I just drove. I just had the press fleet loan, which means I get it for 7 days with a gallon of gas, and I get to drive around and evaluate it. I did some fun stuff with it. I went and torn down a barn in Wyoming with it and used the back end with the plug-in. I ran my Sawzall off the back AC plug. I went farming, and I took it out and drove around the farm with it. I drove it around town. I drove it on highways. I did a lot with it, actually, and there's two videos. If you go to YouTube and you look for Pickup Truck Talk on YouTube, I did two videos on it. I did a video on the bed, and I did a video on the interior. I talked about some things there that I thought were concerns and some pros and cons in the bed. But let's step back first and say that the Ridgeline, if you haven't seen it, it's basically a Pilot with a bed. It's got the same kind of Pilot nose, and it's got a bed on the back, and it's a lower vehicle. It's lower than, say, Toyota Tacoma. It rides lower. It's a unibody truck. It does have three frame rails, but they consider it a unibody truck the way it's built. It's a very, very comfortable ride. It's the most comfortable ride I've ever had in a midsize truck. I went down some washboards on dirt roads, went down 30, 40, 50 miles an hour, and had no problems. It handled every washboard perfectly, and it was a very muted sound coming from those washboards. It was very comfortable to drive. I actually had to slow down because I didn't realize I was going that fast because I didn't have to worry about getting beat up in the cab by hitting all these washboards. I think the overall styling of the black edition, I mean, it was black. I mean, I'm black, I'm black, I'm black, black wheels, black logos, black everything. It was funny because the first day I had it, I'd take a bunch of photos because I knew that it would never look that good again. Not with the dust storms, not with dust and rain. And I don't know if I like the look. I don't know. It's okay. I'd like it to look more aggressive. I'd like it to look more appealing, I think, from a masculine point of view. I think it's a very feminine, low-key truck. It's interesting. I was talking to one of the chief engineers, Kerry McClure, on that. And he's the chief engineer for the Honda Ridgeline. And he said to me something that was very apt in looking at the truck. If you take away the machoism appeal and the machoism out of trucks, and you just look at them as vehicles, the Honda Ridgeline is a really good truck. And I tend to agree. If you look at it just from what a truck's capable of doing, it's a very capable truck. It's like a El Camino midsize truck kind of crossover kind of thing where you can drive around all day. You can drive long distances. Doesn't beat you up. It's fun to drive. Driving dynamics are okay. It's not a tight turn, you know, tons of acceleration. You're not burning tires in first, second gear. Let me tell you that. It's not happening. But it's a very nice, pleasant driving truck. It's a long distance driving truck. However, when you step back and you analyze it as a truck, I think you have some mixed results. And I've historically waited till I had my press-loan vehicle on it. People have asked me several times my thoughts on Honda Ridgeline. It's a tough truck to talk about because there's certain things I like about, certain things I don't. You know, I off-roaded with it in Texas, and there's a podcast with myself and Kerry McClure. It's from the I think it was like mid-October. It's on the podcast listing, and it's a trucks one. There's one with SUVs and one with trucks, and him and I drove around with it, and it's very capable off-road. Surprising, actually, capable off-road, because usually unibodies aren't very capable, but this handled really well off-road. And again, like I said, the washboards, I had to get on the washboards and handle really well. And so it's a very well-handling truck off-road. There's a lot of issues I have with the interior. I have issues with how the buttons are set up. I don't like the full, it's got a full touch screen, and I have concerns about working in the field all day or building a fence or something and getting inside the truck and trying to touch the touchscreen because it's going to scratch. And in fact, I think it's going to scratch really easily. I don't care for that. I don't care for the cruise control button. Check out the video. I'd make a deal about it. Buttons are my thing, I guess. I made a big deal about the cruise control button because it took me 20 miles to figure out how to use a damn thing. And I'm not a not knowing kind of guy. I mean, I drive a lot of vehicles, but if it takes me 20 miles turning on darn cruise control, I'm going to get a little upset with you on that. And I just don't understand the logic behind the thinking on how they set that up. I just feel like it was a $43,000 truck. I feel like the interior could be a little bit nicer. I just don't think it's got the luxury level that you expect at that price point. The bed is very interesting. So the outside is just okay. It's not very appealing to me. The inside, I think they can do a lot more with it. Drives nice. Powertrain is nice. Fuel economy, 25 mile per gallon highway. I mean, that's great. And the bed. So let's talk about the bed. So when they unveiled this truck, they made a big deal about the bed because they have a lot of things back there, a lot of interesting things. The first thing I want to point out with this Ridgeline is because it sits on lower, it's really nice because you actually access the bed by putting your hand across the bed rails and get into it. I'm 5'6 on a good day, and reaching across in some of these full-size trucks is a challenge. If you throw, like, say your golf clubs in there and they roll to the front, or you throw in 2x4s in there, if they're short 2x4s, say, not 2x4s, let's say the 2x4s by 4 feet, you get some shorties or something, or 3 feet, you can't reach across the bed and grab them. If you put some PVC pipe in there, it's hard to get to in many full-size trucks. And so this is nice. You can reach in there and you can grab them, you can pull them out, and you have easy access to them. I like that a lot. I like that it's got a two-way hinged tailgate. So on one aspect, you can open it like you would an SUV that has the door that comes out. And the other way, you can fold it down. Now, the folding down is like any other truck. The hinged tailgate, what I really like about this, and I think it doesn't get played up enough when you're talking about truck media folks and what they're talking about with it, is if you do landscaping and you put some rocks in there or you put some wood chips in the bed, when that tailgate swings out, you can sweep out the bed and everything goes right out, right? If the tailgate folds down, where's that stuff go? We know where that goes. It goes in a slot in between the tailgate and the bed. That's where all the stuff accumulates, and you're constantly taking the broom and fighting that off so you can close the bed because you don't want to push out the hinge and break the hinges on the tailgate. In this case, you can open it up sideways like you would an SUV one, like, so it goes to the side, and you can easily sweep out the bed. I think that's a great benefit. It's really handy. So if you know, and this is your urban truck. So if you're planting flowers, if you're getting a bunch of soil in the bed, you can sweep it out really easily. Now, the bed also has, and this is a big thing for them, was an in-bed audio system, and they actually worked a lot on engineering speakers back there to make the whole bed an audio system. And it was a big deal because I was talking to Kerry McClure about this, and he said to me, we looked at tailgating with a truck. Like, what would you use that for the truck if you're going to tailgate? And they spent a lot of energy on that, and it's perfect, right? So you're tailgating, you press a button inside the cab on the infotainment system, and it turns on the bed speakers and turns off the interior speakers. You only have the bed speakers on at once, and you play some music. And you can have your tailgating. You can do the things you want to do, tailgating around the truck with the bed with the music playing. You listen to the pre-shows on the radio, whatever you want to do, tailgating. So it's perfect for that. And when I tore down that barn in Wyoming, I turned on the in-bed audio, and we listened to music while we're tearing down this bed. It was nice. It was a nice change of pace. It's also got the household adapted. It's the adapter, the plug-in. It's the AC adapter, so you can plug in your tools. I plugged in my Sawzall, ran it off the truck. Now, it's got a 120 and a 400-watt inverter in it, or 110 and 400-watt inverter in it. The 110 wouldn't work for my Sawzall, so I did the 400, but it may work with a truck off, but I turned the truck on. I had some issues getting it all to work, and that was probably just me. Speaking of turning it on and saving the battery, which is I thought was a valid point on the in-bed audio, like, if you turn on the audio, how long until your battery dies? If you're going to kill your battery while you're listening to music, that's kind of a dumb thing, right? Nope. Honda thought about it. It's got a battery sensor on it for that radio, and they work together. So if you get down to a charge that's around where you're not going to be able to turn on your starter, right? So your starter and your charge, the alternator charge the battery up, it'll turn off the radio. It won't let you turn on the radio and kill the battery. It stops you from doing that. It keeps enough charge in that battery to flip the starter on. So I thought it was really cool. I was able to turn on the audio and not worry about the battery. And I did have to turn on the truck to use the 400 watt for the Sawzall. But I would imagine if you're doing TV or something, you can do 110 watts and leave it off. And what's nice is, like I said, is it'll play the music, it'll play the 110 inverter, it does all the stuff for you, and it doesn't kill the battery. Nice peace of mind feature. The other feature it's got, speaking of peace of mind, is the trunk in the bed. So it's got a trunk. That's legitimately what it is. And it's about half the bed, and the bed's a short bed, like 4.5 feet. It's a really tiny bed. But this trunk, you can open it up, and inside you can store stuff. So you put ice down there and put pops, and you can put your tools down there. You've probably seen Honda Ridgeline's got commercials, and they have advertisements and all the stuff you can put down there. And so it's nice to store that, and it seals tight. I never had any rain while we had it, so I didn't get to see if it dripped into that area. But it's got a plug in the bottom. I mean, I think it's be fine. It seals pretty tight overall. I really like the fact that when it closes, the latch and the locking, it's got a lock on it, is in line with the tailgate. So you'd have a really hard time sticking a screwdriver in there and trying to break that open. So from a thief standpoint and theft standpoint, your stuff's really secure, and if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't even look at it because it fits so nicely with the bed. You know, you can see the cutout outlines, but if you're just staring at it at night, it doesn't really stand out as opposed to, say, a Ram box. And Ram boxes are great. Don't get me wrong. I like Ram boxes, But with the RAM box being on the side of the bed, you can walk over with a screwdriver, just tap that, and just pops right open. The Titan boxes are inside the bed. They stand out more because you can see that they're in there. The Honda box, I mean, you can spend a lot of time trying to get the damn thing open and be nothing in there because you don't know what's in there, and getting to the lock is kind of a pain. Now, with that said, I did like that feature of it. Overall, I didn't like it. Here's the problem is that, so I should say this differently. I did like it and don't like it. I'm so mixed on this truck. Can you tell? There's so many things I like about this truck, but things that don't work. So like, I did the job site. We were out there in Wyoming working on this barn, and we're taking down the wood, and so here's the thing. My tools are in the trunk, and I'm going to load the bed with the wood, right? So if I load the bed with the wood, I can't get to the trunk because the wood's on top of the trunk. Okay? So I can't put my tools in the trunk, and I put them in the back of my truck, in the back cab. Well, it's a $44,000 truck. I don't want to put tools in the back of the truck. I don't want to beat up the leather. I don't want to tear up the interior. I want to put them in the trunk. So what do I do? Well, I had to think differently. I had to bring sawhorses with me. I had to put the wood on the sawhorses, and then when we're done, I had to put away all my tools in the trunk and then put all the wood in the bed. I think this is significant depending on what you do. So like, let's say you're out there and you want to go camping and you throw the four-wheeler in the back of the bed, right? And you put your camping gear in the trunk. You get to the campsite, you have to unload the four-wheeler to get your camping gear. Now, some people, that's perfect. They want to do that anyways. Some people get that camping site. They leave work on Friday night. They get the camping site at 9 o'clock at night. It's dark. Nope. You got to unload the truck and you got to unload the four-wheeler to get to your camping stuff. I was given this scenario of, let's say you want to go to the hardware store and get a bunch of 2x4s. You want to work on the outside fence. You want to hang fence or whatever. Well, you'd have to unload all your fencing materials and then get to the bed, which isn't a big deal, but it's kind of a pain depending on your project. So it just challenges you to think differently with a bed. I was thinking, like, if you go tailgating and you put a bunch of chairs on top and table or whatever you want to do, and then you put your food down below, yeah, you got to unload the bed to set everything up to get to the trunk. But the trunk's nice. But again, see, it's a mixed thing. I have this truck. It's like, it's really good idea. It's a really good idea, but you definitely have to change the way you think. And I think this truck challenges you to change the way you think about a lot of things. What makes a truck? Is it big wheels? Is it a harsh ride? Is it 20,000 pounds of towing? You know, what is it? Or is it just the versatility of a truck? Is a truck just a great vehicle because it's versatile, because you have the bed and you're able to get into the bed easier and throw stuff, whatever you want, in the bed and move on? Is the versatility what's attractive in a truck? So it asks you to think differently. You know, do you need that macho front end with a lift kit on it if you have to sacrifice fuel economy? Do you need that big macho looking truck when you're just driving around empty 80 to 90% of the time? Do you need the crew cab 8-foot bed for the handful of times you're going to pull your RV? You know, that's what this truck does. It makes you reconsider what you think is a truck. And I'm mixed on it. And I've said I'm mixed on it. There's things that just drive me nuts. Some things interior drive me nuts. Some things on the trunk I just can't get used to. Like, I don't want to unload my drywall right away. I want to unload my tools first or my wood first. It's just how I work. And I don't want to make a compromise on that. But I like it. I like the idea I can go to Sam's Club and throw a bunch of frozen goods in the back in the trunk, and they're secure, and it's basically a cooler. It's a cooler on wheels. It works out perfectly. So just go check it out. Go to the dealership, check it out, see it on the road, make your own decision on it, email me, let me know what you think. I think the price point concerns me a little bit, and I think that there's some opportunities in the cabin to make some changes in the interior to make it more user-friendly. But it's definitely a discussion point. It's definitely going to get you talking about trucks. It's going to get you talking about trucks in a different way than you're used to. So just go check it out. Go check it out. And that's it for this week's show on Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. Thanks for listening. Make sure you check us out on PickupTruckTalk.com. Check us out on Pickup Truck Talk on Facebook. Like I said, the YouTube. We're on Pickup Truck Talk on YouTube. We're on iTunes. You can download it. You can hit the subscribe button. And we'll see you down the road.